Coming up with Danny Parkins, we're going to spray some 409 on NBA teams with what they got to clean up to make a deep playoff run. And we're going to talk about the surprising firing of Michael Malone and Calvin Booth out there in Denver. That's coming up right now. Welcome back to another episode of the Kevin O'Connor Show. Joining me today is Danny Parkins. He's on Breakfast Ball every morning on FS1. He's a co-author of Pipeline to the Pros. You can see right over my shoulder. Danny, how you doing?
KOC. Good to be on, man. Thank you very much for the invite. And yes, thank you so much for pandering. I'm thinking like the Marcus Smart, the Jaren Jackson, the guitars, those look like staples. Those look like they're always there. I feel like Pipeline at the Pros is maybe getting a little placement just for this episode.
Yes, it's getting perfect placement for you, Danny. It's our first pod together. I'm excited to do this with you. We're going to be talking later about contenders. We're going to do some spring cleaning, discuss what they have to clean up in order to make a deep playoff run. But first, we got to discuss the latest news because, boy, Nuggets fire their head coach Michael Malone and Calvin Booth. I recorded an instant reaction pod yesterday, a short one with Dan Titus, and have since learned more. But before we get to some of that, Danny, I want to hear your thoughts on, do you think they made the right choice in firing both Malone and Booth?
No, I don't. It's a little hard not being in the room, right? Because so Theo Epstein, smartest executive that I've ever talked to or been around, and I talked to a lot of them reporting that book, Pipeline to the Pros. Brad Stevens would probably be a close second. But Theo Epstein said that he really believed in the Bill Walsh theory that for leaders, if you hit a decade, the message just deaf ears. It falls on it. It could be the right message. You could be the right leader. It doesn't mean you're not a good leader. But if the same guys and the same team and the same people are hearing the same voice in the leadership position after a decade, eventually it's going to go stale. And so I think that is certainly a reasonable thing here. But Michael Malone is a good coach. And it's not like he's had a super team. And since he became a coach in, what, the 2015-2016 season, it's him and Steve Kerr, the only coaches to have amassed 450 wins or more and at least one title in that period of time. So I believe in the new coach bump. Like, I think that that can be a thing in basketball and in other sports. But Jamal Murray's hurt. You know, like there are fundamental personnel issues with that team on the defensive end of the floor and with the lack of health and availability of their clear-cut second-best player that are not going to be solved by firing a coach. So I think the timing of it is the shocking part of it, not necessarily that it happened, but I don't also believe that they're better without Mike Malone. I don't.
So, I mean, you talked about Malone there, and I think that's all fair to say. Do you think it was the right timing then to fire Booth right now? Or do you think they should have waited on this as well and just the timing, is a mistake?
And listen, it's what, three games before the playoffs? Like the GM's job is done. Like the GM's job at this point in the season has really good seats. You know, like, so if it was so bad behind the scenes that they were not speaking to each other, and then you're saying, well, so I'm firing both of you because neither one of you are right. You're both being petulant here. I'm firing both of you. Okay, I suppose that's reasonable. And maybe you would make the argument that if you just fire Booth, it makes it look like you're siding with Mike Malone in the power struggle. But who cares about that? Like, the question should be, what helps the Nuggets win playoff games and playoff series this year when you have the best player on the planet who nobody wants to play? You know, they'd be like, Minnesota matches up well with Denver. Like, okay, but no one wants to see Joker in a seven-game playoff series. So you need to be able to make a very convincing argument to me that the present of the Denver Nuggets is better without Malone. Without Booth, it doesn't matter at all for the present. Right? He has no impact on this playoff run. So to me, if you want to fire Booth, you can do that now. If you want to fire Malone, do it when you get eliminated from the playoffs. Because I just have a very hard time believing that you're better off for right now, today, the next couple of weeks without Mike Malone. I have a hard time believing it.
So here's the way I look at it. Have you ever watched The Bachelor or The Bachelorette? Have you ever watched that
show? Yeah, I'm so proud of my wife that she's finally given up on The Bachelor, so I don't watch it anymore. But for so many years of our relationship, she's like, I have to watch all these games with you. I'm like, you don't. You don't. But yeah, I've seen too much Bachelor in my life, yes.
So you definitely know the point of a two-on-one date with The Bachelor, yeah, and course. The Bachelor. For the listeners who don't know, in the Bachelor world.
Pretty self-explanatory, no?
Yes. A two-on-one date, there's drama in the house. The Bachelor or Bachelor brings two people on that date. And sometimes they send one person home. Sometimes one person's got to go home
at the end of the day.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And sometimes two people go home, though. Sometimes they send home both. I think that's exactly what happened here with the Nuggets, that Kroenke and ownership saw Booth and Malone, and they said, hey, in all likelihood, we're going to fire Booth this offseason, but let's fire both right now, because this team, three games left. What's the point of firing Booth now? What's the point of firing Malone now? Fire Malone now is to get a look at Adelman. David Adelman, they're going to be the interim head coach. He's been kind of a guy that's been with some interviews. He has an opportunity to be a head coach at some point. Get a look at him. And with Booth, it's in part the drama. Getting rid of this drama that's been in the locker room and in the organization, where you have Booth, who has openly talked trash about Malone to other front office members, to even media members. Booth created a culture in Denver where, like, front office members were afraid to talk to coaches, and coaches were afraid to talk to front office members. So everybody's walking on eggshells. So, you know, Booth isn't all to blame there. Malone had a big mouth too. He didn't help matters. And there's a Booth camp and a Malone camp, and there's no collaboration between anybody. They had no relationship. They had no willingness to make a relationship. And with Malone, like, he didn't help matters. He gave Booth plenty to be frustrated about with roster decisions. Like last year, he's playing two-way guys over draft picks, two-way guys who aren't even eligible for the playoffs. Colin Gillespie's playing last season over Jalen Pickett. And this season, like a lot of these guys, Pickett doesn't get much of a chance until there's injuries, and he plays well when there's injuries. Other draft picks aren't getting consistent opportunities. And so, you know, Booth taught too much. And yes, you can blame some of the poor decisions he's made after losing KCP and losing Bruce Brown. But some of those rookies could have been good with opportunities. And Malone was stubborn. He was resentful. And as the longest tenured guy in the organization, all that's true. He made no effort to be the bigger man. He had made no effort to develop a relationship with Calvin Booth. And so it was a two-way thing with issues brewing over the course of the season. And my impression is that Kroenke and Nuggets ownership was like, okay, we're just going to get rid of both, have a clean slate here, press the reset button, and hope this helps the culture, hope this helps the locker room, and make the most of this season that looks like a sinking ship if we don't do it.
Yeah, the truth is that it probably doesn't matter. Right.
Yes.
The truth is that it probably doesn't matter. And that's the thing that is a fascinating part about NBA coaching. Like, how many true difference making coaches are there that they become blameless? Because most of them are expendable. It is a remarkable thing that since 2016, five coaches who have won championships have been fired within two seasons. Ty Lue, Frank Vogel, Nick Nurse, Bud. And now obviously Mike Malone. Like that is a remarkable thing. And it just speaks to, like, they don't matter that much, and you certainly don't get job security from winning.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is crazy that this has become such a trend. Coaches that have had great success, even though, you know, Taylor Jenkins didn't win a title, the fact is that he was a successful coach for an extended period of time. And you have this happen all within weeks or days in the case of the Nuggets, before the end of the regular season. And in some ways, I kind of respect it from, like, these decision makers, Kleiman, the GM of the Grizzlies, and then also Kroenke doing this with Denver, because you see this opportunity where, like, OKC is the favorite. We'll talk about contenders in the West, but they're not necessarily unbeatable. These teams feel like there's a chance. And so you're taking a big risk. Something that could be super criticized in media by your fans, make people feel like they distrust you, and you're doing that to increase your chances this year. And so for Kroenke and the Nuggets here, you can, and I have knocked them for being cheap, but they do know winning. They own the Nuggets. They've won a championship there. They've won with the Rams in the NFL. They won with the Avalanche in the NHL. They now own Arsenal. So you know, say what you want about their willingness to pay the tax in the NBA. They know what success looks like, at least. And so in this case, they're firing Booth, firing Malone, and now have an opportunity to have David Adelman as the head coach for three regular season games before they hope they make the playoffs. And he's always been the offensive coordinator. He's always been the offensive coordinator of that team. And granted, he can't seem to figure out the bench without Jokic. Well, it's an opportunity for him. You know, he seems well-liked by players to maybe fix the locker room there because Malone lost the locker room. You know, Jokic liked him. Jokic still liked Malone. But it seems like a lot of the other guys in the locker room didn't like Malone. And, you know,
lose the locker room, you lose your job. You would think Joker would be enough to save him if he wanted to. He clearly didn't. Like, it wasn't that big of a deal for him to save him. And again, man, like the Nuggets are not good enough to win. They're not.
So you don't even have them in like the finals contender category. Like they're just out. To win the finals.
Not even with Jokic
being as dominant as he is. The guy that you said yourself, nobody wants to see him.
Nobody does want to see him. No one wants to see Giannis either. You can't win that way. It's very, very difficult. Some of these teams are really good. And you just like said it as an aside, and I know we're going to get to it. I am so surprised by this like reporting that has come out over the last 2 months about how just teams in the NBA are like, oh, we're fine being on the side of the bracket with the Thunder. Or like, you got to do it before we'll believe in you. Or the Thunder aren't that unbeatable. They seem to, and I know the last two games against the Lakers have worsened this argument that I've been making for a few months now on television, but I think they're very clearly the best team in the West. And I don't think that they're going to have much trouble in the Western Conference playoffs. These Lakers games have put a little bit of a dent in that theory, like I said, but I don't think that the Nuggets would have much of a shot against the Thunder in a 7-game series.
You don't think anybody really will give them much trouble in the West?
No, listen, the other thing is like the Luka trade has maybe given cover to the Memphises and Denvers of the world because they're like, we can do something shocking and it's not going to compare to what Nico Harrison did in Dallas. Like, we'll get like the B block on First Take for a day and then they'll go back to talk. You know what I mean? So like, it's the type of thing.
Where I mean, like, it is Luka's return to Dallas tonight. So. Yeah.
But I mean, honestly, like the NBA is crazy. The NBA is a soap opera. The NBA is player empowerment era. There's no job security. It's like, man, they traded Luka Doncic. So the Mavs traded Luka Doncic at 25 after he carried them to an NBA Finals appearance. So like no subsequent move or firing or trade can really be all. You can't be like, I can't believe Michael Malone. I can't believe Taylor Jenkins got fired. Like, really? Because Luka Doncic was traded. So literally anything is possible.
Yes, I think that's a really good point. The Luka trade definitely does change what teams could feel comfortable doing.
Yeah,
in this
of course it
team.
Does. Yeah, you're like, man, it's really gutsy to fire Mike Malone because of the media backlash. I'm like, Mike Malone can walk down Madison Avenue and no one would know who the hell he is. The Mavericks are welcoming back. They're giving out 20,000 t-shirts that say thank you to Luka in his native language tonight. They're treating it like he retired and it's a jersey retirement ceremony. They traded him and are doing a celebratory thing. Like, it's crazy. It is crazy.
I did not see the thank you is in his language.
Yeah, they're giving out 20,000 t-shirts tonight. Amazing. Thanking Luka Doncic. But he didn't leave in free agency. He didn't retire. You traded him. And as soon as he comes back, you're like, thank you so much for everything you've done. It's not normally how it works.
I hope Nico has a very quiet room away from the arena. I hope he's not there.
He can't go.
He can't go now.
He can't show his face at the game tonight.
There's no way.
I'm not even kidding. Like, you wouldn't sleep for days if you had to hear the things that people would say to Nico Harrison if he goes to that game tonight. No, maybe he like makes an appearance 2.5 hours before tip off and like has his assistant take a picture and put it on social media so he could be like, see, I'm here. I'm not afraid to face the music. There's no way he's with the fans invisible during the game. No chance.
So you're saying he should pull a LeBron?
You said that, not me. You said well, that. Not
me. Just joking.
What a weird story. What a weird story that is, by the way.
It is a very strange story.
Yeah, I know that's not what you want to talk about, but I honestly don't understand like how that could happen.
Yeah.
How could the reporting be that he was there, but he wasn't, but then he was? It's all very weird. Some journalist messed up badly, but we just don't know who it was.
Yeah. Ethan Strauss wrote about it on House of Strauss. Pablo Torre did on his pod.
Pablo finds out.
Yes, very interesting approaches on this whole subject. But it does seem like it's something that the LeBron camp does not want to discuss or comment on
at all. Yeah.
Well, because, you know, maybe not. I don't know the full details there. But we'll take a quick break and be right back talking about spring cleaning for NBA contenders. All right, Danny, spring cleaning time. Let's talk about NBA contenders and what's one thing each of them need to clean up in order to make a deep playoff run. You want to start us off?
So I can pick any team?
Any team.
I can pick any contender?
Any contender. Okay. And it's your definition of a contender. I might not think they're a contender, but you might think there's a contender or vice versa.
Okay. Let's start with Cleveland because they're the one seed. In the East, they have the guy who I don't have a vote. I should have a vote. I don't understand why Evan Mobley is not going to win Defensive Player of the Year. I think he is the best defensive player without Wembanyama personally, because like Lu Dort is amazing, but he's also surrounded by other really good defensive players, right? Like Caruso, they're all good defensive players. On Cleveland, that's not the case. The Cavs defense is 12th in the NBA. They're allowing 112 points per game. That would be the second most by a champion over the last 30 years. Like I think their defense probably against Boston, and I know they've played Boston four times and it's 2-2 and they've all been close games and they actually are like net plus one in the four matchups. But it feels to me like Cleveland's defense, I don't know how they clean it up, if it's just like they muck it up in half-court sets in the postseason and they all lock in and blah, 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 whatever the narrative that you want to assign to it is. So I don't have the solution to it. But if I'm a Cavs fan, I just am terrified that when the game slows down in the playoffs, like it always does, that their defense will be too vulnerable in half-court sets.
Yeah, I mean, I think for Cleveland, their defense has tailed off over the course of the season. And that's in part because I think, you know, it hasn't been, you know, pedal to the metal for them. They've eased off a bit since early March after they're blowing teams out. It just feels like they're not playing with that same intensity that they were midway through the year. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe taking a little easier means more energy for the postseason. Maybe that could be a good thing. That could be the positive argument on the side of that. But they certainly do need to turn it on. And even if they do turn it on, that's where there's concern about, and I'm very related to what you're saying about defense. For me, it's Darius Garland. Darius Garland, defensively, how are they going to account for him being the smallest guy on the floor? That teams are going to attack him, try to bring him into ball screens, on ball. They're going to try to get him involved off ball. How are they going to account for that? And Mobley's going to have to be a big part of that. Jared Allen's going to have to be a big part of that. Obviously, all their wings, DeAndre Hunter getting him at the deadline. Are they going to be willing to pull Garland off in those situations? And also the flip side of this is, will Garland make it so he's able to overcome his defensive shortcomings with offense? Because offensively, before the All-Star break, he's named an All-Star this year, pre-All-Star break, averaging 21.6 points per game, shooting over 60% in the restricted area, over 50% in mid-range, over 40% from three. Since the All-Star break, and this relates to an injury he had a hard fall second game after the All-Star break against the Knicks, hit his face, looked like a face injury, but he also got a hip contusion on the play. Ever since then, 17.9 points per game, below 60% in the restricted area, just over 40% from mid-range, 41.5%, and only 34% from three. So he has not shot the ball well at all on floaters, mid-range, three-pointers when he was lights out prior. So can Garland get back to becoming elite offensive efficiency to overcome the fact that he is going to be a target on defense? That's my concern. concern for Cleveland. And to me, I think they're below Boston. I picked Boston in the series, you know, in six, probably. I think that's fair. You got to give respect to Cleveland for being a 60-plus win team. But so you would agree, Boston over Cleveland still right now.
Yeah, Boston deserves to be the favorite over Cleveland. I've been impressed with how Cleveland has played them when they've matched up head-to-head. But again, seven-game series, I know we'll talk about Boston. Like, how Porzingis is playing right now, it's unfair. Like, what? Like, they're going to get the best version of him for the playoffs too, and health. Like, obviously that can change at a moment's notice, but that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so, but it's funny, like I brought up the idea of the Cavs defense, and I think your answer is correct that it's not terribly dissimilar to the Lakers, where it's like, well, their solution to some of their defensive problems that just can't be solved is just being better on offense.
Yeah.
You know, like they, Cleveland, if they are going to win, they've been the number one offense for a large stretch of this season. They just have to be the best offensive team. And so, Boston will target Darius Garland. They will screen with his man. They will try to switch Tatum onto him. You know what I mean? They will target him repeatedly. And there probably is no actual on-court answer for that, assuming he is actually on the court.
Yes. I'll pick it up with the Celtics then. What they got to clean up is the health of Jaylen Brown, because you got him playing on Tuesday night despite having a bone bruise in his knee, and it seems to me that he's trying to get to 65 games because then he's eligible for NBA awards. The thing is he's not going to get all NBA this year. He's not going to get all defensive team, and so I don't know why he's playing in these games right now when he has a bone bruise. He's not moving the same laterally on defense. He's more stagnant on offense. He doesn't look healthy. I think Jaylen Brown should sit until the second round of the playoffs. They're not going to need him in the first round, regardless of who the opponent is from the play-in. They won't need him until round two against...
A little disrespectful to my Bulls. It's a little disrespectful. Yeah, okay, I don't know if
Buzelis and Giddey and Kobe White, you know.
Disrespectful.
Yeah, they've been fun.
They could lose a couple of those games by single digits, okay? It's a little disrespectful. Go ahead.
And shoot the head. Yeah, maybe they steal one, get really hot in a game.
No, probably not. Well, they can cover some spreads, okay? They can cover some spreads.
I mean, all due respect to the Chicago Bulls. Sorry. And I know Hawks fans are probably very angry with me for saying that too, and Magic fans as well. So I get everybody mad at me. I get everybody mad at me for that statement. But, but really, for Boston, you need, like, for Jaylen Brown, getting to 65 games is pointless this year. What's going to help you is winning another title. That's what helps you most with your legacy and what you're trying to build. Maybe even another finals MVP, being healthy for June. And so Kristaps Porzingis, who, as you said, has been unbelievable.
It's crazy. It's crazy how good he looks.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if he is this for the playoffs and they are healthy, then I don't think they really lose. You know, that is just, wait, you just add like a 7-foot 3-point unicorn who, like, it's just totally unfair. They, like, oh, they have another guy who can score 30. You know, that feels completely like a cheat code to them. It's been weird that they're 26-13 at home. Like, that just seems like an anomaly this year. I just, like, wrote that down in, like, the small of my notes for them, because they're going to, you know, in theory, you know, going to be locking in more on that level in the postseason. But they are the team that, with this version of Porzingis, has the fewest question marks.
Yeah.
Right? Yep. Tatum has taken his game to another level. Tatum does anything that you need to win. He is... surpassed Jaylen Brown, because I was a guy that was like, he's more talented than Jaylen Brown, but my eye test of when I watch him in big games, sometimes he would float a little bit, whereas, like, I like guys like Shea, who, like, will sprint to the ball, like, give me the ball, like, the ball's gonna be in my hands at the end of games. And that was not always the case with Tatum. This year it has been. Like, Tatum has that edge, the, whether he's pissed about the Olympics or pissed about finals MVP, or he's just continued to get better every year of his career, whatever it is, he is obviously first team all NBA, obviously their best player, obviously a huge mismatch and matchup problem, that it feels like the only thing that can derail them is health.
I think you can argue Tatum has become underrated. It really has.
I definitely had underrated him. Like if you were not watching games this year, and your impression of players is big games, right? Is playoff games and all that. I think some of the criticism of Tatum has been fair. But this season, I think he's become underrated. Like I saw the Celtics like little cute social media push for him to be MVP. That's ridiculous. He's not the MVP.
That's why. Like he's this MVP caliber player in a year. Jokic is an all-timer, and SGA is having this unbelievable season, leading a team that's, you know, pushing for mid 60 wins, almost going to get 70 wins. Right. It's just but he would be an MVP in a lot of years in NBA history.
Definitely.
With what he's done,
and he has removed any doubt, whether it existed or not, of who the MVP of the Celtics is.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like if you bought into any of that, and I think there were varying degrees of people who did, he is ridiculous. And I'm with you. Underrated, like, is the fourth best player in the NBA, is that underrating Jason Tatum?
Arguably, because he's this five-tool player that checks every single box.
Right.
He is a playmaker. He's solved that. He has improved his efficiency as an ISO scorer. He, even though, you know, he goes through cold stretches as a shooter, he is a great shooter, a guy who can create shots off the dribble for himself and his teammates. He's an excellent defender,
right,
versatile. He rebounds. Like, he does literally everything at a good level or a great level or an amazing level on the floor. So in most years, he'd be an MVP, but definitely not this year. What do you get next, Danny?
All right. We'll go to the Thunder. And I think they're my preseason pick to win it, not out on any limb. I've said all year that I think that they are so much better than everyone in the West that I thought they were going to flirt with, like, if you set the over-under at, like, Western Conference playoff losses at 2.5, that I would have been fine taking the under. They are a little SGA dependent, and SGA is a good guy to depend on. Right, he's leading the league in scoring. He's got 72 straight 20 or more scoring games, which is ridiculous. That's the fourth most in NBA history. Wilt Chamberlain has two different such stretches. Then it's Oscar, and then it's Shea as an active streak. We talk about LeBron's double-digit streak, which we should. It's remarkable, approaching, 1,300 games. Shea has 72 consecutive 20-point games. So, like, if you're going to depend on a guy, he's pretty damn dependable, but he accounts for a little over 26% of their scoring. The next highest guy is Anthony Edwards at just over 23% of the scoring. It's the highest since James Harden, percentage of points for a team, for the 2020 Rockets. Like, I like Jalen Williams. I love Sam Presti, wrote about him a ton, reported on him a ton in Pipeline to the Pros. They're obviously the organization best set up for the next 5 years because of all of their draft capital. But whether you think he's a foul merchant or not, but like if the whistle doesn't go his way and the shot doesn't fall, which is, again, it's been rare, are we positive that Jalen Williams or Chet or whomever is ready to pick up the slack in playoff games, putting the ball in the basket? I think that is like the thing with that.
On my notes, I have written Jalen Williams and Chet Holmgren, be ready. That's number one thing for OKC. And I think you're spot on, Danny. Like, SGA, outstanding. There's going to be a night he might only have 17 in the postseason because teams are just loading up on him, trying to do everything possible to slow him down. And that means on that night, it's going to have to be Jalen Williams. It's going to have to be Chet Holmgren. And we saw in the postseason last year, obviously, you know, Chet, he's just a rookie last year, but he did not perform at the same level offensively that he did during the season. And Jalen Williams did not either. And I shared this on my pod earlier in the week with Jason Timpf. And these stats, I'll share them with you as well. This season, Chet Holmgren on isolations and post-ups has logged only 22 possessions. So, and he shot made only 8 of those shots. So he is not a guy they've relied on to ISO score out of isolations or score on the post. They may need to in the postseason. Jalen Williams has shot only 39.6% out of isolations. That ranks in the 61st percentile. So he's been average efficiency when he needs to create one-on-one. That needs to be better. That needs to be the thing that gets cleaned up in the postseason for OKC really to be without flaws because they have everything else. They have an elite defense. I have no concerns about their defense other than sometimes maybe they're a little small. We saw that against the Lakers with Luka and LeBron shooting over the top. But overall, I'm not. That's a real nitpick, in my opinion, if you're talking about any concerns with OKC's defense.
Yeah, I mean, if you can trot out a lineup of Hartenstein, Dort, Caruso, and Shea, and then tell me that it's a team that has defensive questions.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
Absurd. Yeah.
I know. Did I say Caruso? Yeah. Like, I mean, come on. Like that. Yeah. That's.
And Jalen Williams, too. Right?
Yeah,
I mean, right, like, there's right. So many
yeah.
guys.
Yeah.
It's endless. Right.
Their depth, the freshness, because none of them play that many minutes. Yeah. The defensive questions. I know
versatility.
People say,
they can play with two bigs or one big. There's just so many different ways they can play.
Yeah. I think they're awesome. I think that they've been like coasting's the wrong way to put it. And these Lakers games the last couple of nights have been eye-opening. And I think it would be an unbelievable Western Conference Finals. I'd love to watch it. But I think if we're saying like the flaw of the Thunder, like by definition, we're kind of grasping here.
My next one, related to what you just mentioned with the game on Tuesday night, it's the NBA. It's the officiating. Clean up the officiating. There's no way Luka should have been thrown out.
Such an outrage.
Ridiculous. He's such talking trash with a fan. It's a 1-point game in the middle of the fourth quarter, and they ruined what could have been an amazing final 7-8 minutes, a playoff preview matchup. And that referee, JT Orr, in that game, so he throws out Luka. The next play, he calls a technical on Jared Vanderbilt for jawing with Caruso. A couple plays later, he calls a cheap foul on Gabe Vincent for very like light, minimal, just irrelevant contact on SGA, like near half court. Just, like, you got to clean it up if you're the NBA. You got to make sure you have your best officials throughout the postseason, and like behavior like that where you're in your feelings as a ref and calling this tech on Luka in that moment, you got to get rid of that. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I didn't know we could go off the board. I like that. Yeah, clean it up, refs. And also on that subject, Jeremy Price is a loser. Jeremy Price, we know Jeremy Price. Did you read Dave McMenamin's reporting? The guy who calls himself courtside tattoo dude. Shut up. He's like, I'm known as courtside tattoo dude. No, you're not. No one knows who you are. And you're like, oh, congratulations. You got the game ball. You had an impact on the game, but you're a complete dork. And that's coming from me. I see a dork. I know a dork. I am a dork. That is such loser behavior.
We know dorks. We do.
Yeah.
I know dorks very well.
Jeremy Price is a dork. Courtside tattoo, dude. Get the hell out of here. That's just the most ridiculous quote. I read that Benjamin story. I'm like, this is an outrage. Outrage. The NBA should ban him. I know they're his seats and he pays for them, but it's a complete outrage. So you took refs, so I get to go to another contender?
Yes.
Okay. all right, well, then let's just do a pretty easy one. Let's do the Rockets. Whether you think they're a contender or not, they are the 2 seed. And they're a historic rebounding team, right? It's the best rebound differential in the NBA since 1997. It's absolutely preposterous. Second chance points, offensive rebounding rate, defensive rebounding rate, all of that stuff. They're 21st in three-point shooting, 23rd in field goal percentage. You cannot win 4 playoff series on second chance points. Like, you have to score in the half court in the playoffs. And I don't see a path to them scoring in the half court in the playoffs.
Does their recent success against Golden State and SGA and OKC, the way Amen Thompson shut down both, does that increase any confidence in you in them?
We're talking about winning a championship. What champion would you compare them to?
Could their defense elevate to that level in the postseason where they're this Piston-style title where it's a bunch of good players on offense and then a dominant defense?
I don't think so, and I understand why a Rocket fan would take it as a shot. I just they are the, they're arguably the best story in the NBA. They are certainly the most surprising positive story in the, right? The Suns and the Sixers would be surprising on the negative direction. They are certainly the most surprising positive story in the NBA. They've got a bunch of assets. They're going to be a very attractive, you know, Giannis, KD, like player movement. They're going to be like, we're a piece away. I don't see a world where they score enough offensively when everybody else just, we see it all the time. Sorry, I'm rambling, but like we see it all the time in NBA history where there's like a try hard team that overachieves in the regular season because when the rest of the league is like kind of like playing at 80 or 90% so that they can be fresh for the playoffs and they ratchet it up to 100%. There are teams, like I've rooted for them. Like when Tibbs was the coach of the Bulls, like that's what the Bulls were. The Hawks have been that team. We're like, how are they the one seed? It's like, oh, they took the regular season more seriously than everybody else. It feels to me like that's what this Rockets team is. And doesn't mean they don't have an incredibly bright future. They do. I just don't think they'll have enough half-court offense to, when everybody else rises to their level of intensity because it's the playoffs, I don't think they'll have enough half-court offense to win multiple series. I don't.
I think you're right. Honestly, I do. I wish I could disagree with you there, but ultimately, I agree. I think with Houston, their offense is going to be their Achilles heel in the postseason. I buy their defense. I buy Amen Thompson. I buy the two big lineup with Adams and Shengun. Like, there's so much Dylan Brooks, what he brings defensively. There's so much to like about what their
defense is. How they defend pick and roll. Yeah. Like
everything, Jabari Smith Jr., their versatility, they can drop, they can switch, they can, they're just an awesome defense. And they completely have bought into Ime Udoka's attitude and the tone he sets as a head coach. They've all bought in. Offensively, I just don't have enough trust in them. That's where they're going to have to look this offseason or next season and find that guy who can be the number one option to carry them. And they just don't have that yet. Maybe it'll be Reed Sheppard. Maybe it'll be Reed Sheppard.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I want to watch, you know, they obviously we'll be watching all of it, but like they're, I don't have a comp for it. Like if yeah. I'm wrong and it's Thunder Rockets in the Western Conference Finals because they beat, you know, like the Warriors and the Lakers, I'll just be blown away. You know, yeah. I would be completely blown away. I'd really struggle to have a comp for it.
Next up, I'm going to go with, and I don't mean to pick on one of the subjects in Pipeline to the Pros, but it's Chris Finch with the Minnesota Timberwolves. He needs to figure out these rotations. And I thought their loss last night was a really good example, just blowing a massive lead to the Bucks.
A terrible loss.
Awful. I mean, look, you can blame the players. They need to execute. They need to figure out how to crack a simple zone that the Bucks put out in that fourth quarter. But I also think Finch, and this has been a trend with him, he needs to have a better feel for his lineups. He's got good depth, a lot of good quality players. And in that game last night, Julius Randle not having a good game. Mike Conley not having a good game. And yet Nasri, Dante DiVincenzo, who were having great games off the bench. Why is Conley closing that game? Why are we having Randle play so many minutes over Naz Reid in that fourth quarter? Where's Nikhil Alexander-Walker in all of this after he helped carry Minnesota to a win over Denver in their double overtime win about a week ago? I think Finch sometimes sticks to the formula rather than feeling the moment. And that's something come postseason time that I'd like to see addressed and needs to be addressed for Minnesota because they have the talent and they've been really good. It's just some of these little things with the guys on the floor.
They've been really good. I didn't even have them like as a true contender though. Like I think my list of it is smaller than yours. Finch in the rotations is totally reasonable. You trust in Julius Randle?
No.
For four playoff series?
No.
To be a consistent, efficient. No. Player that where the ball doesn't stop because I'm not like I think
how can you trust Randle after what he's done in past postseasons?
Right. That to me is the biggest thing. Like they just their net rating is good. The point differential. Like I understand some that they have one of the greatest players. They have guys who could. It's not a question of how are they going to score in the half court. Right. Anthony Edwards is balling his hands. They do check some boxes of the how a good playoff team looks. I'm not denying that at all, and they can be very fun to watch. But I think they rely too much on Julius Randle for me to trust that guy is going to carry them through three or four playoff series and actually like be viewed as a legit contender. I didn't even have him on the list. I think we've gone too long without talking about the Lakers. Why aren't they the second best team in the West? Like, I was writing, what do they need to clean up? Okay, since the Luka trade, they're 21st in offensive rebound rate, 17th in rebound differential, 24th in blocks per game, and 16th in second chance points allowed. But we knew all of that. Like, you know, like we know what their limitations are. For them to be great, they need to be a great offense. And with how Reeves has been playing, as LeBron has gotten his legs back and LeBron not being relied on to do as much and LeBron never being on the court without Luka or Reeves or both. So he's literally not being asked to do as much, which is smart for a, you know, 40-year-old. They're going to have defensive problems. They're going to have rebounding problems. But if Vincent is hitting his threes and Finney Smith does some of the same, like, they can just be the best offense. And so I think that they have cemented themselves, in my mind, as the second best team in the West after these two games against Oklahoma City.
I think so as well. I think they're the second best team in the Warriors West right now.
Because the odds do not agree.
More than the Warriors.
Me too.
Yeah, more than the Warriors. And, you know, for the Lakers, so in that case, you're just saying there's really nothing to clean up. It's just accepting your flaws.
Exactly. Well, right, yeah. Exactly. Like, if they win, it will be because their offense is operating at an unbelievable level. If they lose, they tried to trade for Mark Williams. They flunked his physical. Like, they have not been shy about what they've lacked. You know, not that he's the greatest rim protector in the world, but like, hey, they need young athletic size. They try to trade for him. Then they flunked his physical. Then he's been really good. So I know what they are. I know what they're not. When they've got Porzingis being what he's been, maybe changes this. But who has a better offensive trio than the Lakers do?
Nobody. Not with the leap that Austin Reeves has taken.
That's what I'm saying. Again, if Jaylen Brown's 100% healthy, I think Boston fans would be able to say, really? You wouldn't take Tatum, Brown, and this version of Porzingis as an offensive trio? I think that's a reasonable argument.
Well, maybe not as an offensive trio, but as an overall trio, like including defense, I think you could make the argument for those three with Boston. But offensive trio, I still think LeBron, Luka, so Austin Reeves. Yeah.
So do I. And so it's like, okay, that can win. Like that can win a title. And so I don't think there is a solve. Maybe you disagree. I don't think there is a solve for their obvious personnel issues come playoff time. So maybe it's a cop out, but they're a contender who we need to talk about.
No, I mean, I think it's just going to be about for them executing, you know, obviously performing at the highest level offensively, because defensively they don't have the option to go with the big. That's not an option for them after the Mark Williams trade fell through. So they have to play with this switching defense, super versatility. LeBron needs to be fully energized. He needs to see a heavy dose of Jared Vanderbilt coming off the bench as well. So with them, it's almost not that there's anything to clean up. It's just accepting of the weaknesses. I'd say the same thing with the Clippers. There's not really anything to clean up. It's just about can Kawhi Leonard stay healthy or not? Does the team have enough talent? But I don't think there's anything to clean up. But, you know, in our, you know, topic today for either of those LA teams. But with the Warriors specifically, Jimmy Butler is my concern. He needs to clean it up. He's shooting 29.6% from three this season. We saw in the game Stephen Curry gets held to 3 points by the Rockets. He barely shoots in the game, barely scores in the game, did not feel the moment in that game. And with Butler, I've said this 100 times in this podcast, he hasn't taken over and dominated a single meaningful game ever since game two of the 2023 East Finals. He was not great the rest of that series. He was not great in the finals. He has not been great since then for Miami or for Golden State in a single meaningful game. And so that's where I look at this Warriors team and I think, okay, their best lineup right now is Draymond, Jimmy Butler, Moody, Pods, and Steph. That's a small five-man lineup.
It's I love Pods, though.
Oh, Pods is awesome. But that lineup's good. I love Pods. I love a lot of those guys individually. But that's a small five-man group that's going to be abused on the boards. You're going to have teams selling out on Steph, sagging off of Draymond and Butler, possibly ruining spacing. They're going to be daring Moody to shoot as well. Can you play Looney with that group? Maybe not, because not enough shooting. Quentin Post, who is a seven-footer who can shoot, but can he survive on defense? There's some lineup issues with Golden State that can't be resolved because of the players' flaws. But Jimmy Butler is the guy who can overcome all of that if he goes, turns on playoff Jimmy mode and becomes the guy that they're expecting to get. So that's the player that the Warriors need to see.
See, yeah, so I wrote down the Warriors and I wrote down playoff Jimmy question mark. That was my entirety of the note. So you and I are pretty aligned. But, like, is playoff Jimmy still in there? Or is the only reason we talk about playoff Jimmy is because it's an awesome nickname?
You know what I mean?
It's just great branding, and he's done it, and he's earned it.
Great meme. Leaning over the scoreboard on the side and the bubble. Like, it's great. You know, put it all out there.
He's earned it. He's awesome. Getting nearly $60 million a year to be unhappy in South Beach is a weird one. That's an odd one for me. But Draymond has been great defensively. I guess he's going to win Defensive Player of the Year.
I don't know. It's ridiculous. I mean, look, Draymond should be a candidate, but I don't think he should win the award.
I don't know.
Even Steph, first team All NBA. Are we forgetting about the first 40 games of the season? Do those just not matter at all? Is this a 25-30 game award?
You think that's on the table?
Tom Haverstraw made the argument on my pod last week that Steph should be fifth on MVP ballots. I've seen a lot of people say he should be first team All-NBA. Are we forgetting about the first half of the season when he was not putting – he was not performing anywhere close to the level that he is right now? He looked like a shell of his former self. Draymond and Stephen Curry were talking about how you can't trade future picks. We can't ruin the future of the organization. Are we forgetting all that? We can't forget all that.
Yeah, like listen, I love Steph, obviously. I mean, there's four locks, right? Shea's a lock. Joker's a lock. Giannis is a lock. Tatum's a lock for first-team All-NBA. I think there's a more compelling argument for LeBron to be the fifth spot than there is for Steph Curry, personally.
I agree.
personally. And I guess Donovan Mitchell, best player, best team in terms of record-wise, is a reasonable – but like I probably would put LeBron on first team and then put Mitchell and Mobley on second team. Like if I had a ballot, but I can't argue with all NBA best player, best team is in terms of record, it's pretty sound historically. So I'm not gonna have a problem if Mitchell makes it, but Steph Curry would shock me if he made first team. So listen, I mean, the Knicks, not a contender.
Oh yeah. You don't have them as a contender.
They can't beat good teams.
Yep. So they're not even a contender. No chance. 0% chance.
You're saying to win the championship, correct?
Yeah, to win the championship.
They have zero wins against the Celtics and Cavs, and they would need to win 8 of 14 against the Celtics and Cavs. The Knicks against teams with better records than them this year. They are 1-10. They are outscored by an average of 15.3 points per game. 8 losses by double digits. That's the Cavs, Celtics, Thunder, and Rockets. Their one win came against the Rockets back in February. Mitchell Robinson hasn't been there the whole time. Brunson's been hurt for something. Stop. Like, I love Tibbs. I love Tibbs. Cat has been great. They won the trade. All of those. The Garden is going to be rocking. They're going to be a really fun team to watch in the postseason. But no. They are not beating Cleveland 4 out of 7 because they were not even going to get the opportunity to, because first they would have to beat Boston 4 out of 7. There's no world in which they beat Boston in a playoff series.
I agree. I wish the Knicks could make a run. I wish they could. I just don't see it. And that loss to Boston was a bad loss. Jaylen Brown barely playing for Boston, and he wasn't good when he was out there. And the last play call, why is Josh Hart even on the floor? How does the ball end up in his hands? Tibbs has always had some end game play call difficulties. Never mind the minutes. Never mind the fact that it took until Brunson was out to put the ball in OG's hands or put the ball in Bridges' hands.
Yeah, Bridges is the more egregious one to me. But yeah. So, I mean, like, again, love Tibbs. Hope I get to go to a playoff game at MSG this year. You know, like, but I better get tickets in the first round. Because I don't think it's going to last much longer than that. So I'm out. I'm out of true contenders.
So I mean, like, we have not mentioned the Grizzlies. I'm out on them as well. We haven't mentioned the Pacers. Fun regular season team, but not a contender. No. Pistons, no. not a contender, but a very fun and very good regular season team.
Oh, of course. Yeah. This was you booked me under the guise of we're talking about.
Yes. And now the only one that I'd have questions about with us not listing them is the Bucks. Are the Bucks worth mentioning? When Giannis is still such a dominant force, are they worth mentioning here? And if it's the one thing they'd have to clean up, it's the Kuzma minutes. Kuzma's the guy they go out and trade Chris Middleton for at the deadline. His minutes have been horrible this season. They've been a plus 13.8 without him, a minus 1.9 when he's on the floor. Giannis has been great. Kevin Porter in that comeback against the Minnesota Timberwolves was incredible. Lopez, Gary Trent, Taurean Prince, AJ Green, those guys are going to be your rotation players, and you hope Damian Lillard can get back. But they got to figure out the Kuzma minutes and whether he's even part of that playoff rotation. But you don't even think they're a contender. They're not even
worthy
of the discussion.
No, I'm happy to talk Bucks with you. I love the Bucks. Giannis is one of my like six favorite players in NBA history. Like I love Giannis and I love the Bucks. Yeah, I think that the Dame injury takes them out of being an actual legitimate contender.
They need him. They need
him badly. And Giannis could average 35, 15, and 10 for a playoff series, and that maybe gets them by Indiana. But I just said, you did a great job. Like, there has been what? Is Trent better than Prince? Is KPJ better than Kuzma? Like, is Doc too stubborn to really make those changes? Because the bench has outperformed the starters for them a lot this year. So, like, what do you do? Is Doc actually going to make those changes? He's a pretty entrenched guy in how he thinks about going about this thing. So, like, that would be something to clean up to maximize your best five with Giannis out there. But I think similarly to Denver, great player, star player, all-time player, but not enough of a fully complementary team around him to make me believe that you're going to beat the Boston Celtics. Like, the Celtics are just so much deeper. And on the Celtics, everyone knows their roles. Like, there's no question about the hierarchy, who you're going to target to get shots, the bench, how you're going to stagger the minutes, Pritchard, like the whole thing. Like, it's just their team just makes complete sense top to bottom. I don't think this version of the Bucks makes enough sense top to bottom without Dame, right? Like, you've removed the top 15 player in the world from the equation. So, like, is he going to be healthy and 100% and going to gel in the next week? That seems unlikely.
Yeah.
You know. So yeah. I think there is just as likely to lose in the first round. Like, it's a coin toss.
I agree. It's a tough series. Like, if they face the Knicks or the Pacers in the first round, I don't think I'm picking the Bucks, who may or may not have Dame back. And if he is back, is he going to be Damian Lillard, or is he going to be a shell of his former self?
This is one of the best seasons in NBA history that is going to be completely anonymous. Giannis is 30-12-6 with excellent defense.
Yeah.
it's an all-time it's Giannis.
Both him and Jokic, these all-time players having all-time seasons. They're gonna end up two of the 20 best players in NBA history, maybe two of the 10 or 15 best, depending on how you want to argue it.
And I don't feel like Jokic's season has been totally anonymous, because I think he's been in the MVP debate a little bit more.
And he might win it. Like, I don't think he will. I think SGA will win it. But Jokic, you never know. Maybe. We'll see.
You never know how the voters are going to break down on the statistical argument. I mean, if you think that he actually can win, you absolutely should bet it, because you can get him at like 20-1 right now to be MVP. If you shop around some places, it's like varied from like 12-1 to 20-1. So I don't think he's going to win, but I feel like at least Jokic has been, because of the statistical superlatives, the 60-point triple-double, the only guy ever to be top, you know, top 10 in all four categories, including steals, the only guy to be top three in the big three. Like, I feel like Jokic has, like, gotten his national love.
And he's got the narrative as well behind him. If the Nuggets end up with a three seed after firing their head coach with three games left, yeah, after having injuries to Jamal Murray and dealing with a bunch of, you know, everything all year long, he has that in his argument too.
Yeah, but Giannis, no one, sure, in like a job like mine, like one of these like national talking head shows.
They're the D block, the E block. Maybe they, not even, yeah, getting a topic.
Really make it. I think people just circle back around and do the Lakers again. Like, yeah, so I don't know, man. Yeah, Giannis is one of the, I think it's one of the great seasons that has just been completely anonymous. So I love the guy. I think he's the perfect superstar. I could do a whole pod with you on Giannis, but it's not, I don't think they're a contender, unfortunately.
I agree with you, Danny, right now. Unfortunately, hopefully they get Dame back. Danny, thanks for joining me today, man. Where can people find all your stuff?
Yeah, check out Breakfast Ball, 8 to 10 a.m. Myself, Craig Carton, Mark Schlereth. We have a blast. We do a ton of NBA. Subscribe to us on YouTube. You can follow me on Twitter at Danny Parkins if you want. But yeah, just check out the show. I know, you know, your TV's maybe not on FS1 at the end of your night with the games or whatever, but wake up, give you a different form of morning sports talk on television or YouTube or wherever you get your content.
Danny, you're the best. Thanks for joining me today, man.
Thank you, Kevin.
Big thank you to Danny Parkins for joining me on today's episode. Thanks to Mike and Amy for producing it. And thanks to you for giving us a listen. We'll be back again on Friday with Tom Haverstraw talking about everything going on in the NBA. We're at the final stretch here, folks. At the final stretch. Let's go. Playoffs and play-in right around the corner.